Free Talk Live, and you are free to call in and talk live here on the airwaves, because that's what we do on Free Talk Live. That's why we named it Free Talk Live. The number, 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE, as in freedom. It is Mark with you.
Peakless Mountaineer.
And Richie Rich.
Thank you for joining us, Richie Rich, Peakless Mountaineer. Let's go on. I have a, so today I was dealing with some friends at its church, right, day, and they were talking about masks and how important they think they are and these sorts of things. Now,
what church do you go to? Because the people I hang out with around here are totally anti-mask.
A Quaker meeting.
Oh, okay.
And I can understand why people who would be in the geriatric quadrant might be concerned with, the infection, right? And we are certainly told that masks are great things. And I'm not saying they're not, but I am. Okay.
Do you wear your mask to protect those geriatric friends of yours at the church?
I wear my mask because somebody's asked me to. Here we go. Centers for Disease Control. This is from The Federalist, Jordan Davidson reporting. A Center for Disease Control report released on in September shows, so this is September, not too long ago, that masks and face coverings are not effective in preventing the spread of COVID-19, even for those who consistently wear them. A study, there's a hell of a sentence.
Oh, is that why we were wearing these?
Where was he in March?
To be effective in stopping the spread of COVID-19.
Back in March, you weren't supposed to have a mask. You were supposed to take your masks to the hospital and give it to them.
Okay. In April, then.
I don't know when we started wearing masks.
When was it okay for us to wear masks?
I don't know. But here, let me read it to you.
All right.
A study conducted in the United States in July found that when they compared 154 case patients, and that's not the biggest study around, but it's not insignificant, who tested positive for COVID-19 to a control group of 160. So now we're talking more than 300 people from healthcare facilities who were symptomatic but tested negative. So these are just people who are sick.
Okay.
All right. These aren't even healthy people. Over 70%, 70%, 70%. That's almost 3 out of 4 people of the case patients were contaminated, who were contaminated with a virus and fell ill despite always, and this is quotation marks, always wearing a mask. So I don't know how people are going to get around this, but it's interesting that, you know, this is the case. In the 14 days before illness onset, 71% of case patients and 74% of control participants reported always using cloth face coverings or other mask types when in public.
Well, I'll already tell you how they will get around this, right? The claim is already that you don't wear masks for your protection, Mark. You wear it to protect other people from getting the virus.
I guess
so.
If
they're wearing the mask and they're around people not wearing masks, well, it's those dirty people not wearing the masks that cause them to get infected. Because it was never that your mask protects you. It's that your mask protects someone else.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. What are you supposed to do here?
You'd think there'd be sort of a crossover there, though. Like, if it's going to keep the virus in my face and out of yours, then it should be able to keep the virus out of your face, or in your face and out of mine.
They don't want to hear that. I've made that claim to a number of different people over the past few months. No. You wear your mask to protect me, and I wear my mask to honor you and protect you.
Hmm.
I go, can you just wear two then? So then you have double covering, and then I have to wear wear one inside out, because that's the same like it would be over my face then, right?
I'm sure they love that.
No, people hate me.
Oh, wait until they make you put a mask on, and then you go out to the car and get your bulletproof face mask.
That's what I'm saying. I did that at the bank the other day, because they were cleaning the drive-thru, so I walked in without my mask on. They said, sorry, sir, you need to wear a mask. I went, really? Because I'm the only one in here. And we have a disposable one for you. I go, no, I've got my own. And then I went out and got the full compliance mask and walked back into the bank with that thing on and said no words to them after that.
Finished my drink.
Actually, after giving me the initial, like, shock look.
Yes.
Right, the guy goes, that's a pretty cool mask. And I just, I gave him the single nod with the mask on, and that's the end of it.
Okay. In addition, over 14% of the case patients said they often wore face coverings and were still infected with the virus. The study also demonstrates that under 4% of the case patients became sick with the virus, even though they never wore a face covering. Let me read that one more time. The study also demonstrates that under 4% of the case patients became sick with the virus, even though they never wore a face mask or face covering. So apparently wearing a face covering doesn't protect you pretty much at all.
So wearing it always, 70%.
Yeah.
Wearing it never, 4%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mask freedom declared victorious.
Well, and that's the thing. They say you wear your mask to protect me. I wear my human face so that your parasympathetic nervous system can heal your organs so that when you are, you can't avoid viruses and bacteria. That's life.
Stress is a killer, and people not being able to see people's faces and all the other things that are going on in 2020. I mean, let's just stop this. If we're worried about stress, let's stop the presidential election, because I'm sick of it. I mean, like, seriously, so sick of it. And I know we're going to get calls, and that's fine. I would never tell anybody 2 weeks before, a presidential election, nearly 2 weeks, that they couldn't call in about this particular topic. But man, I am so sick of people trying to convince me which crooked old pervert I should vote for.
You're not riding the Trump train? Choo-choo!
Well, I don't. At this point, I don't get a vote because I'm a resident of the Commonwealth of North Mariana Islands. The one vote that my family managed to put together, the three of us.
you're putting a vote by committee?
Well, we did vote by committee, more or less. Okay. We gave the vote to my son as a civics lesson, essentially. Okay. And then his mother basically berated both candidates to the point that he voted for Joe Jorgensen, because at least he's empathetic.
So now he's being manipulated into libertarianism.
Right. I didn't really understand. Like, if you just wanted to vote for Joe Jorgensen, why didn't you just vote for Joe Jorgensen? Whatever.
Because I want him to do it.
As a parent,
we wanted the illusion of choice, and he failed.
I think I should have, I wish, now in retrospect, I would have sort of stood up and said, now we're going to learn about what a secret ballot's like. Go to your room, take this. This is how you fold it up and put it in here. You lick this when you're done. You know, take your pen with you. That kind of thing.
There you go.
And then at the very least, we would have gotten a better civics lesson. Anyway, at least I got a time to talk to him about empathy and how that's important and those sorts of things.
I mean, if you wanted to reduce the stress that we're dealing with while we're apparently in a pandemic, how about a guarantee that... that one of them will actually become president this. That would be nice. Like, some kind of guarantee that will actually happen. And B, a guarantee that there is an option under which there won't be massive violence. That'd be nice.
I think there won't be massive violence wherever I am, though. Like, I feel like it's
in the Northern Marianas Islands?
There.
They don't get a vote anyway.
Very far from cities.
Suburbia in Florida, rural New Hampshire. These aren't the kind of places that have been lighting up so far.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what I used to say about the town next door to mine that I live in or lived in at one time was nobody does burglaries there, because if they do, they get perforated relatively quickly. It's not the kind of place you'd want to do a whole bunch of violent protesting.
Well, that's
nothing to burn down either.
It's a nice culture to be in.
That is a question. And, if any of the listeners out there fall into this category, I wonder about, because I know some people are concerned about Trump supporters becoming violent after a rigged or, you know, quote unquote rigged election. And I'm curious where they think this is going to happen.
Where the violence is going to happen?
Where will the Trump people rise up? What's
exactly.
The geography?
Exactly. That's what I wonder, because, I mean, there's not a whole lot of them in cities.
It's true. It's interesting. What do you think? The number 855-450-3733. Where will, if the Trump folks rise up, where will they rise up? What's the geography of this?
Invade California.
Why? 855-450-3733. That's right, for the weather. Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live. The number is 855-450-3733. The question is on the table. If Donald Trump loses and the Trumpers rise up in some kind of violent revolt, which has been proposed, where geographically would they do that? And would they go someplace that they don't have power? Would they burn their own cornfields? Exactly what would happen? The number 855-450-3733. 855-450 free as in freedom. Mark with you.
Beakless Mountaineer.
And Richie Rich.
Freedom's Phoenix is a liberty-oriented news aggregation site. And you want the newest and freshest stories and perspectives on current events from those who value liberty? Freedomsphoenix.com has it. Their daily dispatch is the best way to stay up to date on science, technology, historical findings, liberty news, government overspending, and the rise of the police state. Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. Freedomsphoenix.com. Great site. Highly recommend it. Let's go to the one who's been holding longest, Greg in Vermont. Greg, you're on Free Talk Live.
How are you doing tonight?
All's well. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just looking at what you're chatting about. Actually, kind of two things. The biggest threat of violence that I've been hearing from groups is that if Joe Biden doesn't win, then the violence is going to continue.
But the violence is...
They don't want Donald Trump, and they're going to keep burning cities and everything else.
I kind of feel that way, too, right? Like, if you want violence, vote for Trump, because Biden, it's the Biden supporters that are going to rise up. However, so far, mostly, they generally stay in districts that vote Democrat and set their own buildings on fire, which doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Because who is it out there that has... You know, who is it there that has the largest percentage of the population, their group, that is ex-military, police, firearms owners, hunters, you know, people who can actually do something if they start stomping all over you, just like you mentioned, like rural New Hampshire, rural Vermont.
It isn't going to go well.
Just about half, you know, mostly three-quarters of the land west of the Mississippi. I've been saying for a decade that if the big one hit California and it floated off and became another island, we could literally split the country down the Mississippi and let the conservatives take over the west, and the liberals can have the east with all the shit that they want.
Whoa, oh, you can't say that.
LRN.FM.
And hit that button. There we
press
go.
Press all the buttons.
Yeah, sorry
make
about
that. Make
that
go away.
So, the proposal there from Greg in Vermont. Thank you for the call, Greg. Once we get the once we get an S-bomb, we got to let you go.
But there is still violent threats or talk of violence coming from the Republicans, the Trump side, right? Like the people on the left are worried about the Proud Boys.
Yes.
Right. Which, okay, the one time that, so there are two times that I can think of at all that there's been a politically right violent gathering. And one of them was just hilariously small when they did the Unite the Right in Charlottesville.
Charlottesville, okay.
Yeah, like all of, 500 people.
They killed a girl.
Yep, a person died, which these riots have killed how many people? And I'm not saying left or right, but like... It's a very small gathering, whereas the only other time that I can even think of where a violent gathering of right political people has happened was the Proud Boys when they were gathering against Antifa.
Right. And I would say in both circumstances, they're to some extent sort of a reaction. I mean,
right.
They are called people on the right are called reactionaries,
mm-hmm.
a reaction as opposed to an action.
Mm-hmm.
If it weren't for the radical left, there would be no radical right.
I suppose that's true. Let's go to Bill in South Carolina. Bill, you're on Free Talk Live. No S-bombs.
Hello. Listen, I really appreciate what you guys are doing, just bringing it out there and letting people hear it. But, you know, the problem, as I see it, you got your Trump supporters, the conservative folks. They're the people that are actually capable of taking care of themselves. I don't believe you'll see riots in the aspect of Trump supporters getting out there, other than like the Proud Boys you might have mentioned. And they don't hide the fact that they will be violent when they need to be. The problem is you're going to have a response from the right if the left riots. I grew up in New York, and there is a very big move on Long Island for Trump. And it's pretty amazing to see the turnout, the parades they have and everything on Long Island. That's not far out of this city. It's 40 minutes from Brooklyn, where I live. So you have the potential to see some really big problems. Look at the conservatives that are raising up in Michigan and stuff. I mean, even in some of your liberal cities, you're seeing people stand up and begin to say, look, we're not going to be silent anymore. And we're going to say, this is what we need. This, we need police. We need, law and order. We need things taken care of. The problem will be, and you know, you're saying it's not going to be a riot if Joe Biden is elected. I think there'll be riots if Joe Biden's elected as well.
Will it be coming from the left, though, and Antifa?
Yeah, coming from the left. Okay. You'll see a response from the right if need be. Now, that's going to be a terrible thing. You don't want that, because then you end up with the possibility of martial law being put in place. And then you go down the road of confiscation of firearms and all that stuff. I hope it never gets to that. I really do.
So,
I mean, I listen to the conspiracy guys saying it's going to go terrible.
Well, isn't that the purpose of the Second Amendment, though? I mean,
if
some group of Americans rise up against another group of Americans, the idea is that you be able to have a gun to protect yourself. I mean, you know, this was.
Don't get me wrong. I totally agree with that. I was a minority when I went to school because I was conservative, and I believed in your right to own a second, firearm, and I was. From the teachers all the way up, I was the oddball.
So is violence inevitable at this point then? Because if you vote for Joe Biden, they're going to riot anyway. If you vote for Trump, they've already said they're going to continue rioting.
Well, let's not forget that your vote doesn't matter, right? Like your vote isn't going to vote isn't going to make a difference.
Understood. We can have that conversation all day long. No, but I mean, for the average person, who do you vote for to avoid riots and violence?
I don't know if you can, but it comes down to this. When bad things happen, are good people going to sit back and do nothing? Are you?
That is a very good question, and I wish I was more optimistic about the answer.
Yeah, I thank you.
I look back at the Second World War and the generation that fought that. We stood up as a nation and as an individual to fight against tyranny and evil. And I hate to say it, we've not seen it here, but we may see a dividing of the lines. I pray for peace. I pray for peace. I pray God intervenes and that things go peacefully. I don't know they will.
If God wanted peace, he's been sleeping on the job. Thank you for the call, Bill. I appreciate it. I mean,
You believe in an omnipotent God.
Well, I mean, he's been around to be able to watch at least 12,000 years of since the agrarian revolution, and well, there hasn't been a lot of peace since then. But anyway, I would say this. Look at a map of the United States broken out by counties and which party they voted for in 2016 or 2012 or 2008, you pick, and you will see that it is a sea of red with some little dots of blue around it. And I suspect that's where you'll see the violence, is those little dots of blue. That's just my opinion. But, you know, we read an article last week that said 50% of Americans believe there's going to be violence. So I don't know if there's going to be, but I know that 50% of people do. Believe. 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE on Free Talk Live.
News from news.bitcoin.com. $9 trillion, a third of the U.S. debt, has been created just since September 2019. The Bank of China's new digital currency has been used in more than 3 million transactions, worth more than a billion won. Still nothing from the U.S. Federal Reserve's digital currency. John McAfee indicted for tax evasion and SEC violations. Bitcoin.com is your source for getting started with cryptocurrencies, getting a wallet, buying Bitcoin Cash, mining, and all the latest cryptocurrency news at news.bitcoin.com.
Free Talk Live, 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. I guess the question still on the table here is if Trump, is it loses and wins? If Trump loses.
If he loses, yep, and it's considered to be an unfair election by which he lost, and I mean.
And it will be.
Well, it's definitely going to be an unfair election no matter what happens.
That part I'm going to go ahead and say I'm on the side of this. Like I'm coming down and saying the people of some site, you know, some large percentage of the population will believe the election was unfair, rigged in some manner. So,
and to be fair, it is almost certainly rigged to a degree or another in some manner. Well, in fact, probably rigged in several ways in several places in to multiple different degrees.
If it's rigged and Trump loses, good thing he has the Supreme Court to adjudicate that and give him back his presidency.
Well, there you go. At this point, the this lady's name, Amy Coney Barrett.
Yep.
Has not been yet confirmed, but it does seem like a foregone conclusion at this point.
She does appear to be bulletproof from all of the attacks.
Well, she's not really answering the questions, and why would she?
Well, because a lot of the questions they're asking are for her to divulge how she's going to rule on upcoming cases.
Duh.
But you can't ask those questions if you can't answer them.
Well,
Your Honor, are you in fact a racist?
Right.
Are you in fact a rapist?
So first, let me tell you about Bitcoin, and I'll address that here in just a second. So Bitcoin.com, it's where you should go if you want to find out about cryptocurrency, if you want to sign up for news releases. If you don't know anything about cryptocurrency, do yourself a favor, because this is – woo-woo. The train's coming. Change is coming. The United States Federal Reserve has released its digital – has announced a release of a digital currency. China has already released its digital currency. And if you don't know something about digital currencies now – you're going to learn at some point. Do you want to learn before everybody or later? Bitcoin.com. Okay.
Well put.
Yes. So AMB, is that what we're calling her?
Whatever.
ACB. ACB. She could answer a question, says, I'm pro-life.
Okay.
And just answer the question, right? Like, as opposed to, you know, dodging things. And there, she's getting asked a lot of silly things. There's no doubt about it. But the strategically, at this point, the only people she's talking to is the American people.
Well, I mean, there are certain things that are emotional triggers for people of different political persuasions.
Yes.
And the possibility of reversing Roe v. Wade,
yep,
is a huge emotional trigger.
Even
for
though it's pretty bad
political
law.
Left.
It's, you know, it's not good law. Whether you support it or not, it's difficult to support Roe v. Wade from the standpoint of law. It was just sort of a, you know, another patchwork.
Well,
remember, we don't have a government at the federal level, or we don't, you know, the federal government is not a state. It is not an organization that has a supremacy over the states. The states are supreme, and therefore they should be making these choices.
Do you mean
for better or for worse?
Well, it de facto is.
Go ahead.
De jure,
yes,
it is,
yes,
not. Like, on paper, there is no federal state. But as far as what actually happens, there sure is.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the problem.
I think the weirdest part about the confirmation hearings is what came out when she goes like, I'm going to interpret the law based on the way the Constitution was written. And then everyone gets up in arms like, you can't do that. that's not what we want to hear.
Fulfilling your contract, that's not allowed.
That's it's amusing to watch them.
That would be the perfect
it.
Answer.
Yeah.
Yes, you wouldn't. Would you not want someone to interpret something the way it was written?
Right,
seems perfect to me.
This is really one of the sort of fundamental complaints that even both sides will have. The Republicans are mad that places like Colorado have legalized marijuana. Well, the federal government never had any place outlawing cannabis in the first place.
Absolutely not.
The government doesn't. I mean, the founders set up every 2 year funding for the military, not so that you could fund the military every 2 years, but so that you would retire it during peacetime.
Yep.
If only we had peacetime.
Well, the perfect example of this was Prohibition, which, number one, look how well that worked. Number two, they had to change the Constitution
to have Prohibition.
And somehow they got around having to change the Constitution to prohibit a non-liquid substance. Somehow a flower you can make federally illegal without changing the Constitution, but, you know, rotted sugars, that you can make illegal only if you change the Constitution. And
it's obviously ridiculous.
Change it back.
But if you add to the fact that the lawmakers in Washington, D.C., when they voted on cannabis, didn't know that it was cannabis. They voted to outlaw marijuana, which they didn't know was
cannabis. The dirty Mexican plant.
That's right.
Right.
They wanted to outlaw the dirty Mexican plant, and I hear those Negroes smoke it, right? That kind of thing. And then they play their jazz music, and they sleep with our white women. And, I mean,
is jazz really music, though?
I love jazz. Okay.
It is if you're on enough cannabis.
Yeah, thank God for that. So, yeah. Anyway, it's, you know, most of the lawmakers didn't even know that they were outlawing
Then it should cannabis. Be easily repealed now that they know.
No, sorry.
Are they still pleading ignorance in 2020?
They don't want to be found that way. Let's go to Robert in South Carolina. Robert, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hello. I have one quick question, and then I'd like to answer your question.
Sure.
My question is, did you say that Hunter Biden got $83,300 a month?
$83,300 a month.
I did not say that tonight.
I did not say that tonight.
Oh, no, not tonight. I mean, in the past, okay. But I just wanted to say that I heard that on many radio stations, actually. But actually, he got a sign-on bonus, as far as I remember, and I don't think any of the stations have said that. Did you hear about the sign-on bonus?
Wasn't it like over $1 million?
Yes, you got it. It was over $1 million. It was like two or three, something like that. I can't remember anymore. But there was a substantial sign-on bonus that I mean, you know about it. Well, that's good. Okay, that was my first question. And the second thing is, you asked, how do you figure out where there might be a so-called right-wing demonstration? Well, violence specifically. We probably have to be in the Midwest someplace. And a normal demonstration doesn't really start out by radicals. Radicals don't usually start demonstrations. They usually piggyback on other people who do peaceful demonstrations during the daytime. And there are two cities that I know of that have a little bit of that kind of an infrastructure. One of them would be East Des Moines, Iowa, and the other one would be Omaha, Nebraska. So maybe they would be the places. I really don't know. The other places, maybe Tulsa, Oklahoma. They had a substantial bombing there one time, a long time ago, where a U.S. government office building was kind of blown off the map.
I thought that was Oklahoma City.
Kind of an individual guy. I think he was kind of a lone wolf. But anyhow, that was my feeling. So I just wanted to press that by you.
All right,
Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I just don't know. To me, I cannot envision
this, Omaha rising up,
a violent uprising by the right. At this point, I mean, they don't seem like that sort. They prefer the strategic advantage of defense, and would likely wait for that, whatever that might be. And this is their downfall: is that those that would come to take your guns do not come all at once, and there is not an opportunity, therefore, to defend all at once. They'd come little by little, drips and drabs, and...
Well, and they will come, and they will pick you off individually, which is what my always claim would be. Like, when they come for your guns, like you said, they're not all going to come for your guns.
Yep.
But, like, five of them are going to come for your guns specifically, and then you will be without, and then they'll move on.
Right. I mean, you can look at cases like Ed Brown, you can look at the Bundys out west, and see how these things just sort of play out as they play out. And,
Well, the Bundys had the advantage of reinforcements.
And I mean,
they did.
The targeting is kind of weird, because if you're against the police, well, you have a pretty clear target. Whereas if you're against the voter system, I mean, where do you even go? What building do you burn down because you hate the voting system?
The Capitol building.
I guess. Perhaps.
Yeah. The number 855-450.
Start small.
Well, it's good optics, that's for sure.
Nobody likes the
DMV. Nobody likes the DMV.
Please don't turn down the DMV when people are in it. 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. Why can't you get your license online? Like, why?
Why do you need to get a license?
Free Talk Live. Talk Live, 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. You can call in and talk about whatever you want. We were talking about masks and violence after the election and, whatever floats your boat here on Free Talk
Live. If you're going to participate in violence after the election, wear a mask to make it harder to identify you.
To protect you from COVID.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's Mark with you.
Beakless Mountaineer.
And Richie Rich.
855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. free as in freedom. So I recently did an interview, guys, on a movement called Keep9.org. So you can go there, check it out online. I'll tell you what it is. So it's Keep 9, meaning keep 9 justices of the Supreme Court. And
because 9's the magical number.
9's the magical number. There were 6 to start with, just so
according
you know.
To the ancient Norse, yes.
Okay.
Christians prefer 7.
That's a fact.
7 elevens, 7 dwarves, 7 little chipmunks sitting on a fence.
Or 3.
3 is
the Holy
Trinity. Is a holy number. 7 is a good number or something. Yeah, so the idea is that they keep 9 justices. And I think that the vast majority of Americans would like this idea and be surprised that the number of justices is not written down someplace.
So which is why the whole court packing thing is such a big deal all of a sudden.
Right. Well, it was a big deal under FDR, too, and it was a threat.
Okay.
And I think now, personally, I truly, truly believe this is just a threat.
Okay.
That the Democrats will not commit this level of suicide. I mean, this would really be bad.
Would it, though? Is it so? Because if he packs the court, then they have it. And then they have
the, what?
The court, the Supreme Court.
They have lost credibility at that point.
Oh, no. Politicians without credibility?
Well,
what is this world coming to?
And see, that's the thing, though. Politicians can get away with an astonishing amount of stuff as long as they're doing it to fight those bad guys in the other party.
And with Trump getting to, you know, not put 2 nominees in, this is clearly a retaliation
and
for that.
I mean, I could be wrong here, but I'm not sure there has ever been a Republican as hated as Trump. So not only is there, like, not only is there, we're
Lincoln?
Stopping those evil Republicans, but we are stopping Trump.
Yeah. So one thing's at the root of Trump putting Supreme Court justices in, as the Constitution suggests, is that Ruth Bader Ginsburg miscalculated.
Big time.
She believed that Hillary Clinton was going to get, you know, she had to sort of guess about 2 years out, should I retire or should I continue? I shan't live forever. How long am I going to make it? You know, what kind of risk do I want to take? And I'm just going to go ahead and say it, ladies and gentlemen. This is absolutely hubris that caused her to make the decision she made. The wise and calculated decision from this jurist that of which we are supposed to admire so greatly for her great decision making was to get out in, let's say, 2016 was the election, 2014.
Sure.
Yeah. Obama, she could have, you know, sent a little quick message to Barry and said, hey, these are my top 3.
And look at how magnanimous she would have looked. I mean,
yes.
I have decided to step down so that our first black president can choose a member of the Supreme Court. I mean, that would have looked beautiful.
Right. And then he would have, you know, pile driven it through or whatever. And yeah, sure, the Republicans were going to give him some trouble. But ultimately, with 2 years, they were going to get somebody through.
Yeah.
And now, you know, Trump's picking her replacement, and too darned bad. That's
how
the games
play. He's going to get one through in 2 months.
Yeah, it's going. ACB is going through. And all the tears, all the liberal tears in the world aren't going to stop it. Now, look, I'm not rooting for ACB. She is not my kind of justice, as far as I'm concerned.
Because she's going to follow it to the letter of the way it was written?
No, because she's pretty darn conservative, and she's going to come down with the conservatives on this. I'm more of a Gorsuch guy, if you want me to pick one.
No.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, with Keep 9, all right? Keep 9 suggests that you pick 9 justices. Here's a couple of good reasons. The good reason to have 9 justices, even though we started with 6, is, okay, it's an odd number. That's good. It's the number we've got. And
that might be the biggest reason, the biggest selling point is the number we've got.
Yeah, it's people, a huge selling point.
Because people don't like change.
They don't.
Right? You could have dropped it down to 7. You could raise it up to 11. You could pack it to 21.
But if you raise it to 11 or drop it to 7, then it doesn't. So if it dropped it to 7, then you rob the incoming president of the ability to appoint 2 justices.
Oh, no.
Well, I understand, but that's going to look partisan based on whoever the incoming president is. If you raise it to 11, then you give the seated president, whomever that is at the time that it's raised to 11, the opportunity to throw in two more of their side.
Which he already could.
Meaning packing it?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean Trump could?
He already could. If he wanted to, he
Trump,
could.
Trump could try to run through two more justices in the next 2 weeks.
Or four years.
Well, no, he's still got until January.
I suppose. Yeah, I suppose it could be done.
To prevent Joe Biden from packing the court, I'm nominating two more people.
Yes.
Buffer that.
It would be hilarious, but I don't support it.
Okay.
I support...
Because you're fixated on nine.
I like nine because we can agree on nine because we've had nine. And here's the most important one. This is not a joke. This is the reason. All right, the Supreme Court building is by far the newest building. The Capitol versus the White House. I mean, they burned the White House down in the War of 1812. It's an old building. And whereas the Supreme Court building is like from the 50s or something. And it has room. Currently, it's built for, wait for it, nine justices. So,
and we wouldn't want taxpayer dollars spent on remodeling the chairs and the desk.
Not just the chairs and the desk, the offices, yeah, the huge gigantic law libraries. Each of these people have their, basically it's
why we
offices.
Might spend enough for one entire bomb.
Right. Depends on the bomb. You'd spend a lot. Remember, government projects never go the way you
never underestimate the ability of the government to overspend.
Look, certainly nine bombs.
And when you say that the building is like the newest and it's 70 years old, probably due for a remodel soon anyway.
It's probably going to get remodeled, but it's at least you're remodeling in place.
Okay. Yeah, I'm against you on this one. I think that they absolutely should pack the courts, because the more they pack the courts, the less faith people have in the absolutely broken judicial system that we have.
Yeah. And the judicial system is by far the most respected of the three branches.
It is, and it has
Congress
done
is lower than
nothing.
Cockroaches.
It has done nothing to deserve the respect that it has.
I will say this about the current nominee on Trump's part. It somewhat indicates a worry or a fear of losing the election, because if he was confident that he was going to win, he wouldn't need to rush this through either. He could be like, oh, yeah, we'll just wait till after the election because I'm going to win anyway.
Who would do that, though? I mean, you do what you
Someone
can when you can.
Supreme confidence.
I got it. Who cares? you're playing the game poorly if you don't take advantage
Understood.
Of the opportunities.
I mean, remember how we were talking a second ago about how there is a de facto federal state when there shouldn't be one?
Yes.
That's because of the Supreme Court. Their whole job, their entire job, is to go, that's unconstitutional.
Yeah.
And if they had ever actually done their job, we wouldn't be in the enormous mess that we're in.
So the funny thing is it's not their job. And you'll never see anything in the Constitution that says the Supreme Court's supposed to determine whether something's constitutional or not. That's what you learned in civics class. And that's because that's what they've done ever since it's Thomas Jefferson and I can't remember what his second cousin, who was his rival's name, was basically the Supreme Court head juror for a very long time. And he was the one who went up against Jackson on the Cherokee Indians and that sort of thing. And the Supreme Court had appellate jurisdiction from which you can derive the unconstitutional thing. So, I've got a minute here. I'll explain it. juries have always had the right to judge the law. If you get called for a jury, you can judge the law. It's called jury nullification. You can say that, well, this guy is absolutely was smoking a joint outside the police station.
Guilty of the facts.
He's guilty of the facts, but not. But the law is bad, and they can find him not guilty. Mm-hmm. All right? If a jury can do that, then a jury of judges that sits up at the highest level can then judge the law to see whether or not it's constitutional. And that is a... to be able to understand appellate jurisdiction, you have to understand jury nullification, and they never ever want to tell you about jury nullification under any circumstances.
Oh, heavens no, empowering the people.
Yeah. But I get it. 855-450-3733. Are you scared of Amy Coney Barrett getting into office? Are you scared she won't? Are you scared the Democrats are going to pack the court? 855-450-3733.
From New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestselling author Larry Correa comes the latest chapter in the epic military fantasy saga of The Forgotten Warrior. When the Grand Inquisitor perverts the law in his genocidal plot to kill every man, woman, and child in the Untouchable cast, only the traitor, Ashok Vidal, and the Sons of the Black Sword stand in his way. If it's war he wants, it is war he will get. Bane Books presents Destroyer of Worlds. Available September 1st, wherever books are sold. Visit MonsterHunterNation.com. For more. Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live. Kicking off the second hour, it is Mark with you.
Peakless Mountaineer.
And Richie Rich.
855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE, as in freedom. And you can call in and talk about whatever you want to talk about. And we talked about, throughout the last hour, it was violence after the election, mask wearing effectiveness, I don't even know what else. But, you know.
You can Supreme Court justices.
Oh, yes, Supreme Court justices.
Which, I gotta say, I don't even know what a good Supreme Court justice looks like. Most of my favorite and least favorite decisions came out of the same dude, so.
I would like to see Judge Napolitano on.
What I wouldn't give for that.
Right, but, I mean, that's about where I'm at.
I know it's impossible.
Yeah. Because he would judge based on the way the wording is written?
Yeah, probably. Okay. I mean, that's better than nothing. I get it. The Constitution isn't, it wasn't handed down by God to George Washington on Mount Vernon. I get that part. And obviously libertarians have their issues with it. And what is the Lysander Spooner quote that it either the Constitution has authorized all of the bad things that have happened throughout history, or it has been powerless to prevent them. And either way, it should be ignored.
Unfit to exist.
However, if it suddenly became, adhered to and became, and that had good results, then it would only do good things for the document. I mean, at this point, people can say pretty clearly the Constitution is not followed.
I like constitutionalists. We agree in a direction. We may disagree at the distance, but that distance is far enough away that I don't need to worry about it.
Indeed.
And if you want it to be followed, you're going to have an appellate Supreme Court willing to base their judgments on how it was written.
Indeed. I mean, that's how you, right? Instead of just what, I remember Kennedy, who was, recently considered the swing vote. He's now stepped down, but he, at one point in the relatively recent past, in the last few years or whatever, he said something to the effect of regarding gay marriage. The American people's opinion has changed. What difference does that make?
I mean,
what difference does it make? Either all the states have to recognize all the other contracts written in all the other states, or they don't. You can't just pick and choose. Kentucky doesn't get to say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not going to recognize that contract, Hawaii. I don't care." They don't get to say it. Once one state in the United States, this is the agreement. I didn't write the agreement, ladies and gentlemen. I was born here, okay? I didn't write the agreement, and I don't. If you've got an opinion that addresses the law, I'd be interested in it. 855-450-3733. But if a state has a contract, and I don't even recommend marriages because it's a contract between you, the spouse you love, and the state.
Yeah, forget
just
that.
Just ask anybody who's ever got a divorce and gone through family law, which is not, it's not like a regular court. It's not criminal law. It's not civil law. It's something all on its own.
Extrajudicial.
And it is extrajudicial, and the reason it's supposed to be that. The reason is because it's you've let the government into your contract. You can have a contract with somebody, You can just write down on a piece of paper, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have sex 3 times a week, and we're going to share all money equally, and there will never be a cucumber in my salad. Like, whatever you want to write down, you can write
just glad
it.
You said salad.
You can write it down. That would probably be a clause for mine. I just hate cucumbers. Okay. They're just so foul. Just disgusting fruit. Everything you touch with them, they taste like cucumbers. It's
how great. Do you feel about pickles?
I love them. It makes no sense.
Put enough vinegar on it, it's fine with me.
Fine. Yeah, I'm sorry that I don't make any sense, but that's the case. And so, I mean, your contract is your contract. Letting the government in is a bad idea.
I suddenly wish I'd been a fly on the wall when you did your particular vows.
No, we did...
You solemnly swear to have and to hold and to never feed a cucumber to.
Mine was at an Anglican church, so the same vows that they gave to Princess Di and whatever, Prince Charles, would have been the same vows. So if you're familiar with those.
Well, look how that turned out.
Yeah. Well, I, at this point, we're fine. Okay. Nobody's been killed in the... dubious high-speed chase. But if people do enter into these contracts with a state, then one of the advantages of those contracts is that another state should recognize them. And it shouldn't ever have been a question. The Supreme Court should have said immediately, as soon as Hawaii, because I believe Hawaii legalized gay marriage judicially, New Hampshire was the first state to do it legislatively. Okay. But, you know, whenever Hawaii said, gay marriage is legal, then, you know, Utah should have been forced to recognize it. And that's what the Supreme Court should have said.
But only those marriage ceremonies that took place in Hawaii. They don't have to perform their own in Utah because Hawaii did something.
No.
Okay.
Right. They would just have to recognize. So All the gay guys could go to Hawaii, and then the revenue would go to Hawaii for all these fabulous weddings, and you know it. You know? And then, you know, other states would get in on the action or whatever. But the fact that Justice Kennedy said something to the effect of the American people are now ready for gay marriage. Well, come on. That isn't the point. It's not what your job is. Your job is to read this document, interpret this document, and give out a ruling. And the interpretation is clearly that if a state sanctions a contract, that other states have to recognize that contract. There's no argument. But, you know, whatever the case may be.
So what I think is amazing is that there is never a question of everyone following federal laws and paying their federal taxes. When the nature of an agreement is, I will do this, you will do that. And we make these contracts. Now, personally, I don't think that it's a valid contract because I never actually agreed to the Constitution for the United States. But, okay, lots of people do. But the nature of a contract is that if I break my half, you get to break your half.
Yeah.
And they have absolutely violated every concession that they made in that contract. So it's astonishing to me that it's still considered that I have to hold my side of this contract.
Right. They don't even have to clarify. Right. Like, all you have to do is read the first two amendments, and these shall not be infringed, and Congress shall make no law.
Right. Seems pretty clear the way it's written. It's hard to misinterpret that.
It's clear as it could possibly be. And then they go and say, yeah, well, you know, shall not be infringed. This, you know, this is an infringement and that is an infringement. Whatever. It's crazy. The justifications for what they do is insane. And of course, the American people continue to put up with it because whatever, you know, doesn't hurt me.
Because have you seen the latest program on TV?
I disagree that it doesn't hurt you.
Yeah, well, go ahead. Make your case.
It's not infringed. It's attenuated.
Well, if people didn't follow the Constitution the way they do, they wouldn't need to pay their taxes. If they didn't need to pay their taxes, then we would be able to have a decent monetary system instead of being forced to use these Federal Reserve notes that they can just print with no restrictions at this point.
Well, that's an argument for Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency, right? Pick one that you like, because you technically don't have to use their monetary system. There are other monetary systems available. It's just prohibitively difficult for the average person.
And the reason that it's prohibitively difficult is because everyone uses the Federal Reserve notes. And the reason, well, one of the reasons that everyone uses the Federal Reserve note is because it's the only way you can pay your taxes.
And your mortgage. So, you know, the banks, which basically are franchises of the Federal Reserve, all have to operate with USDs, Federal Reserve notes, whatever you want to call the American dollar. And thus, your mortgage, which the vast majority of people have, if they don't, the non-renters, the people who claim to own their property and simply don't, for two ways. They don't own their property twice because the bank owns their property and the municipality in which they reside owns
Funny
their
how
property.
The government can tell me to get out off of this land, but I can't tell them to get off of it, and I pretend to own it.
Right, and it was a contract, don't forget.
All comes down to violence.
Yeah. 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE here on Free Talk Live. What do you think? Do you own your land? Can you tell the feds to get off? Talk Live. The number's 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. You can call in and talk about whatever you want to talk about. It's Mark with you.
Beakless Mountaineer.
And Richie Rich.
855-450-3733. So, after I tell you about Divi, Beakless Mountaineer, I want to talk about the Democrats' plan for the Federal Reserve. We were just talking about money creation a little bit here, and let's go a little further with it. So you've heard us here on Free Talk Live talk about Divi. And Divi is spelled, it's like Divi as in division. And maybe you've wanted to set up one of their easy-to-deploy masternodes or stake Divi so that you can begin earning Divi right now. Well, Ian, who's the main host here on the Free Talk Live, he says setting up Divi Masternode was super easy and staking was even easier. And he did this stuff and, you know, they call it a one-click Masternode and they call it that for a reason because it is really easy. We're not investment advisors here on Free Talk Live, but we think that you'll be impressed with your earning potential with Divi as compared to traditional investment vehicles. Go to DiviProject.org. That's D-I-V-I. DiviProject.org. Get started. You can buy Divi at several exchanges. They've got links right there. Or directly from the Divi team. They will make it easy for you. If you need help, there's a link to their Telegram channel right there on the front page above the fold. Click on Telegram and you go in there. You ask some questions. They'll take care of you. All you have to do is be able to type.
Hey, what is staking exactly?
It's tying up a certain amount of their cryptocurrency in order to help the network, and you get paid for it.
So you, like, buy it before it's released, or?
No, it's cryptocurrency that you've got, and you just kind of, you know, wrap it up. So there's, you know, supply diminishes, and that, of course, increases demand, and they pay you for that particular service.
Gotcha.
D-I-V-I, Divi Project. .org. There's also a lotto that goes with the people that are staked. So in some cases, you just sort of win extra money.
Nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
That's a good way to divvy it up.
Yeah, it requires a certain amount more interaction with your investment to stake than it does to put up a masternode. Masternodes basically are plug and play. Mm. You know, put it up and you can check it out in 6 months.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's DiviProject.org, D-I-V-I, DiviProject.org. Free Talk Live, by the way, did that. And, yeah, things turned out pretty well. Divi had a nice little run up, and I suspect, I don't know, as a layman looking at it, I suspect it's going to make another run up.
As the Federal Reserve collapses, something will make a run up.
Speaking of the Federal Reserve, what are the Democrats going to do regarding the Federal Reserve?
All right, so this is from the Washington Post.
I believe it more already.
Fake news.
Fake news.
Democracy dies in darkness. Let's hope. Democrats introduce bill to give the Federal Reserve a new mission, ending racial inequality.
Because that's what a banking organization should be doing.
I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that they're capable of it, and they would never, never cause any unwanted consequences or, you know, do the wrong thing in the process.
Let's see what their solution
is. Different colored money for different colored people.
There are actually like stamps out there you can get for like gay money and black money and these sorts of things. Some people will use $2 bills to signify that used to be they used to do back when the dollar was worth something. People would use $2 bills in order to signify that you know something different's going on in this transaction.
Okay.
And you know, perhaps stamp it with gay money or black money or whatever.
Interesting. Congressional Democrats introduced, this is from August 5th, by the way.
Not exactly the newest of stories, but still interesting. I bet people didn't hear this one.
Well, it's been introduced and hasn't been voted on yet, as far as I can tell. So
it stays that way.
We shall see.
Or voted down.
That would be the ideal,
I
think.
Just be back in 2 years.
But then they'd have to reintroduce it, so at least it wouldn't already be on the table to... Anyway... Congressional Democrats introduced new legislation on Wednesday that would make reducing racial inequality in the U.S. economy an official part of the Federal Reserve's mission. The Federal Reserve Racial and Economic Equity Act requires the central bank to take action, quote, to minimize and eliminate racial disparities in employment, wages, wealth, and access to affordable credit, unquote.
Some more risky loans.
How in the world could the Federal Reserve determine whether or not it affect businesses and their hiring practices as far as racial equity? And what would that look like? So is racial equity like, the U.S. population of racial minorities? Is it the state population of racial minorities? It is the local? Is it the county or the city? I mean, I don't even know.
As many black-owned businesses as there are white-owned businesses.
Yeah, that's...
And if there aren't as many black-owned businesses, you give them loans to start them.
Let's just start them.
Start them.
That is a very good question, especially using the word equity, because equity has a range of different definitions, all the way from, just fairness. Like I was talking earlier about how there's this idea of we have a contract, and if I fulfill my half, you have to fulfill your half. That is a kind of equity. These days, it's very common for that to be sort of a code word for equality of circumstance.
Sure, that the outcome is fair as opposed to the opportunities.
Yep.
And there used to be called equal opportunity, and I like the idea of equal opportunity for everybody out there.
I think it's a pipe dream.
I get it, but...
And yeah. I think that it's a dangerous pipe dream, because every time someone tries to make it happen, it ends up just crushing absolutely everything. Like, they had that story of all the smart people had to hear, crashing sounds to keep them from thinking.
Kurt Vonnegut's...
Harrison Bergeron.
Harrison Bergeron.
That's the one. And that really is a view of what attempting to acquire equality of opportunity would actually look like.
And here's what so Vin Armani, who was on the host on the show at one point, sort of coalesced it down to three forms of privilege. Wealth privilege, meaning you're born into wealth and, things are better for you. And it's hard to argue that, right? Like, rich people get more opportunities than poor people. And
no doubt.
There you go.
No doubt. It's probably the biggest reason for people acquiring wealth beyond what they need.
Sure. That's why they do it, so that they can have better opportunities for themselves and their children. Okay. Beauty privilege, which... studies have been done over and over again that attractive people do better in their careers and marry better, and all kinds of things happen. It doesn't take a genius to figure this out, people.
We had a similar conversation on the way over here in the car about, admirability of political candidates, and basically based on what face do you want on your political sign?
And height,
brought that up too.
The short guys just can't get a break when it comes to getting elected president.
I think we've had one president ever that was actually shorter than his competition.
Well, that's interesting. But Biden has got to be shorter than Trump.
He is.
Yeah. So you're talking about beauty privilege. I'm just guessing here that Halle Berry has probably got it better than, Mama Jo or whatever her name is from Honey Boo Boo. Just guessing. And race doesn't really matter there, because it's about beauty, not race. And the third one is intelligence privilege. There's, ladies and gentlemen, do you really want to make intelligent people dumber? Because you can't make dumb people smarter.
That's a fact.
You just can't do it. You can make intelligent people make bad decisions.
You just pump more money into schools.
Yeah. Right. Pump more money into schools. That's right. They're drowning in the deep end of the Olympic pool. Free Talk Live.
Moose is the German Shepherd, now 11, and he's been an amazing dog. Moose is so active and so alert and hasn't had any kind of health problems at all. He has a beautiful coat, and at 11, he'll still run and chase the ball. He has been on Dynavite since he's a puppy.
Dynavite for life.
Because if they're getting all their vitamins, micronutrients, microbials from the beginning, then you're not going to run into the problems associated with the grass, pollen, dust, dirt, fleas, ticks, you name it, and the itching and shedding down the road.
DINOVITE.com.
We tell anybody that has a dog, if there was something that you could do right from the beginning so that you don't have expensive veterinary bills, why would you not do it? Get the Dynavite.
You won't believe how happy your dog will be.
I get my Dynavite from DINOVITE.com.
Free Talk Live, 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. You can call in and talk about whatever you want to talk about. We're talking about the Democrats' plan to for the Federal Reserve here and just sort of the misguided notions of identity politics generally.
Trying to make the Federal Reserve woke.
Well, yeah. What else would you do with it?
Well, obviously, we have done nothing to solve the racial disparities, and the Federal Reserve is our Superman that can handle the problem.
I kind of feel like if you wanted to go after racial, and I'm not going to say there's not some kind of racial disparities in the United States, but if you go after them, it should be on the local policing level. Like, that's where the rubber hits the road.
So you want to defund the police?
I don't want to defund them as much as I – well, I mean, yes, I do want to defund the police. I want to, however, remove sovereign immunity – or qualified immunity. The qualified immunity gives a police officer the ability, unlike pretty much anybody else in any other job description, the ability to hide their responsibility for something.
But they need that qualified immunity to carry out their daily duties effectively, Mark.
Expect people who are robbed of their – responsibility to act irresponsibly.
Fair.
I mean, yeah, every time.
I definitely think that the policing is one of the things that's keeping those neighborhoods unstable.
Right.
And it's not the only thing. I definitely agree with Barack Obama on the importance of fathers staying in the families. And if you look at the statistics, that is an enormous change if you have a two-parent household.
One of the reasons is, the federal government's intrusion into the families in general. And one might suggest that it was on purpose. I don't know. Maybe.
Conspiracy theories.
It's a possibility. But ultimately, if you want to fix this problem, give everybody an equal playing field, and then you will see people of all colors rising upward. The problem is when you begin to pervert the marketplace and attempt to make people that otherwise wouldn't be rising up rise up, it's just you're going to have bad results.
Well, and what begs the question in that statement was, how do you give everyone the equal playing field? Like, what does that look like?
Equal playing field means equal opportunity, in my opinion.
Right. And right before the break, you said there's like three factors, right, that start people off with different opportunities.
Sure. We were talking about the different privileges that I will acknowledge. I will acknowledge beauty privilege, intelligence privilege, and wealth privilege. I would say that those things just are the way things are. Like, you can't do anything about somebody like me, born just devastatingly attractive. But God, you know, God made me poor when I was born. I mean, we didn't even have a washer dryer in our house. So, there's a trade-off. And with a mind like mine, I mean, how could it be fair?
To be fair, the only things that that I'm aware of that they have shown any increase in intelligence are, breastfeeding and nonviolent child rearing.
Okay, yeah.
Nonviolent child rearing probably, in my opinion, is because when you don't, smack them around for not doing what you like, then you have to talk to them. And that means that they develop their verbal skills while they're young, when their physiology is figuring out where to assign its resources.
I'm not sure that I agree with your assessment, so I've read this and, you know, just take this for what it's worth. I think that...
From a handsome, intelligent man.
Right, from a handsome, intelligent, born poor guy. So the studies I've seen aren't that children that aren't beaten, you know, as a result, become more intelligent, but that children that are beaten become dumber. And now you'd think that that means the same thing, but I don't think it does.
Well, it's hard to develop with all that stress around being beaten all the time.
It's all about the cortisol,
Since you mentioned the stress and the cortisol, one of the things that very few people are aware of but has an enormous impact on intelligence is the cortisol levels of the mother. Now, and that has absolutely everything to do with how safe is your environment. So if you have a gestating mother that is in a safe environment, she'll have a lower cortisol level and a higher intelligence IQ child.
The safety in the environment is what I believe it's all about too. So I don't believe it's about spanking. I believe it's about terror. If a child doesn't know what to expect and is terrorized, by whomever their caretaker regularly, then you never know what's going to terrorize a child. It may not even be spanking, right? It could just be whatever punishments. Like, you could be an absolute jerk and terrorize your children without ever laying a hand on them. You don't need to do that. It just tends to go hand in hand. True. So I always push back against the anti-spanking crowd because they believe that this is the issue.
It is a very effective method for terrorizing your children. It's not the only one.
It's not the most effective method for disciplining kids. We found better ones. And,
use the more effective ones than the violent ones.
I like that, too.
But yeah, I mean, it really comes down to your body is trying to adapt to the environment that you give it.
Yes.
And if your environment is an unstable, scary, violent environment, then frankly, it doesn't need a whole lot of brains. It needs to be able to run fast and hit hard.
Yeah, that's what it needs.
If it's peaceful, calm, full of people that are negotiating,
yep,
it needs a lot
learning,
more brains.
Right, where learning is upheld is an important factor and these sorts of things, so absolutely. I don't know how we got from the Federal Reserve to...
We were talking about actual solutions for racial inequalities in, how did they put it? Employment, wages, wealth, and access to affordable credit.
Yeah.
Moving on here.
Notice credit. Oh. So the
like
government,
I said, more risky loans.
Right. The government wants you to be able to borrow more money.
Sure.
Really? Is that a good idea? I mean,
they do it with impunity.
To me, we spent, in my family, we spent a good portion of, I guess it was probably 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, somewhere in there. I can't remember exactly, but it was about 3 years where we just worked really hard to get rid of every single debt we had. And life is a lot better at that point. You pay that mortgage off finally. We didn't actually have a mortgage. We had put the building of the house on credit cards. But whatever. You pay that off, it's a good feeling.
But you're so much harder to control that way.
That's what I think it's all about, is that...
That's what this comes down to. It's not a matter of trying to change things for racial groups. That has nothing to do with what they're trying to do here. What they're doing is they're going, hey, not everyone is getting in as much debt as we want them to get in.
Right.
What is a way that we can look like heroes and put people in more debt, which generates more money, which generates more tax revenue, all of which gives us more power?
Under the guise of racial equality.
Exactly.
The bankers and the government, but I repeat myself, want you in debt. And it's the truth. You know,
that's a fact.
And the borrower is the servant of the lender, and the lender at this point is always the government.
Always.
So the way that you can be a little freer is paying off whatever debt you have. Big steps, ladies and gentlemen. Get it done as quick as you can.
Moving on with the article, it would be the first major change to the Fed's mandate since 1977 and would significantly alter the central bank's focus. The Fed's current mandate from Congress is to keep prices stable and maximize the number of Americans with jobs.
Fail.
And 1977, which is exactly the last time they tried this. They already did this. It was the the last time they tried to make housing available equally to everyone. And that's the thing. I mean, financial institutions will look at your finances. And if you force them to look at something else, they will make more poor decisions. And that's exactly what got us into the 2008 crisis in the first place.
What do you think it'd be like if we gave every hobo in America a house to live in? It doesn't have to be a big house, but just gave him a house. I would say that the majority, well, at least a small minority of them would take good care of their houses, and there'd be something for the news people to write about that would make everybody feel better. And the vast majority of them would, they'd be drug dens,
some state of disrepair.
Yeah.
Falling apart.
People would be, pooping on the floor. A whole variety of things. It'd be awful.
Without ownership of that property, they have no incentive to take care of it.
It would, however, reduce our burden on the hospitals.
Because they'd die?
No, because when you actually have a place to live, you don't have to go to the emergency room for getting sick.
Perhaps that's the case. Let's talk about this here. What do you think? What would happen if we gave every homeless person in America a free house? 855-450-3733. Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live. 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE here on Free Talk Live. Call in, talk about whatever is on your mind. It is Mark with you.
Beakless Mountaineer.
And Richie Rich.
Want to thank the amplifiers, specifically. Read that word, I don't have my glasses on.
Oh, which word? Point to it.
The name of the amplifier here.
CleoCat.
CleoCat, thank you so much. I knew it wasn't a word that I was familiar with, and I don't have my reading glasses on. Of course, they're just sitting right here. I could have slipped them on. And
it's all good. Situational awareness, Mark.
Yeah, you could be an amplifier too by going to amp.freetalklive.com. Why would you want to be a gold amplifier like CleoCat? We don't ask everybody to do gold.
And there's so many words on that page too.
Yeah,
like, read that one.
Well, because Free Talk Live allows freedom of speech, I allow these guys to just say whatever the heck they want on the air, and you can too. The number is 855-450-3733. Thank you, CleoCat. Let's go to the phones before we go back to reading here. Peakless Mountaineer.
Sounds like a plan.
Pat in Michigan. Pat, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hey.
With good all evening. This hoorah that the Federal Reserve is proposing.
Yes.
All right. Our Constitution is based upon English common law, correct?
Yes,
it is.
Pretty much.
Allegedly.
All right.
No, it is.
Oh, so, it's based on it.
The Irish have been abused by the English since 1338, enslaved, stole Shanghai, made to work captive on their ships and such.
That's all right? Accurate.
Our land
Press gang.
Sold. Our people have been impoverished. Now, I think we should have a leprechaun dollar. We're three times as much as the English dollar that's spent by the average colonial here in the States.
Backed by the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow?
Yes, yes, yes. And the black man and the red man's dollar should be worth twice as much, too, because they've been in this hoorah.
So then we just move the hands out of what the formerly English? What about Irishmen like me? So I am ethnically mostly Irish, but I have an English last name. What do we do with guys like me?
You're a traitor.
Hey, I was adopted.
String him up for treason.
Nobody told me I was going to be an alcoholic.
Dare you get adopted by the English.
No, I was adopted by a German, so he can shoot me twice.
The Germans did great things in this country.
But they're the working class, not the ruling class.
This is one of the problems with this, any form of reparations. I suspect that's what you're trying to get across to me here, Pat, is that, I've never been enslaved by an Englishman, and I have never enslaved an Englishman.
Who have you enslaved?
I haven't enslaved anybody.
I think we've been enslaved by a whole bunch of Englishmen,
personally.
The feminists
would tell you that my wife is enslaved by me just by having to be in the immediate proximity. Apparently, they don't know who's in charge in that house, but whatever.
Well, you pay taxes.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly
so
enslaved.
That's definitely a partial enslavement.
It's a form of sort of bondage, serfdom, whatever you want to call it,
set up by a bunch of Englishmen.
Yeah, well, ultimately, it's true. I'll concede that, Pat.
Gentlemen, yeah, may I get to the moral of the story?
Please.
The Englishmen, for generations, centuries, have been, I mean, arrows cost money. The dead cost nothing. Send in the Irish. All right? And this is just the game of, you can always hire one half of the poor to kill the other.
Yep. You can always hire the Scots to kill the Irish.
And cuts your costs down.
Or you can always hire the blacks to kill the whites, or the yellows to kill the reds.
Seems like smart strategy from their perspective.
They're just shuffling the cards under the table.
Yeah, he's right.
And why go to the expense of hiring them when you can draft them?
Yeah. I don't know what to, that's so miserable. He's so right, and it makes me so sad. I don't even want to talk about it. You're right. The arrows cost money, and the dead cost nothing.
Which is why I support Antifa fighting the police.
Right, there you go. Thank you for the call, Pat. Thanks for bringing us all down a peg. Please go back. What was the second paragraph of this article?
Actually, I wanted to touch back on what we were talking about, housing the homeless. If we just gave them all
house. We were going to talk about housing the homeless.
And I agree with your assessment as far as most of them, since they're not accustomed to that, would, if they stayed there, would bring it into ruin.
Right.
Some of them would change their lives and be able to keep up on the housekeeping. And I also think some of them would just go back to the streets because it's what they're used to.
Yeah, I think that, when we look at homelessness, no doubt there are people that just, need a break. There's no doubt that there are people who just need a break. But there are plenty of people that are homeless for very good reasons.
I had a friend who was purposefully homeless. And he had more money and better credit than the rest of us.
That may be true. He's probably why he did. I have a friend who's similar. I wouldn't hold him up as a standard, but I mean, look, you got unaddressed mental illnesses. You have, breathtaking money management problems, addictions. But I repeat myself, and a whole bunch of things that aren't going to be solved by some tiny house, even if you give him a piece of land. Because the piece of land isn't going to be where they want to be. It isn't as close to whatever the place that they might procure their drugs are, or whatever the situation is. Can it work for some? Yes, it can work for some. And I've seen it. And I'd be love to have an opportunity to find organizations that help with those kind of folks.
Build a tiny house community around the methadone clinic.
And that is the actual solution there, is organizations that would help with this. Because that's the thing. The Federal Reserve isn't going to analyze the situation of an individual and say, okay, well, you are actually being treated unfairly because of the color of your skin. That's not what they're going to do. They don't have that kind of time and resources, even if they were motivated to do that. Now, what you can do is have charities that will go, okay, this individual will benefit from this being done, whether it's giving them a house or giving them a job training or whatever it is to get them on the right track. They can go, okay, well, this individual will actually make use of these resources. This individual will not make as good of use of those, so we're going to save that one until later.
Do we not already have charities that specialize in helping homeless people?
They exist.
We have government programs. My wife worked for one. So there's something called vocational rehabilitation, right? They determine, do you need eyeglasses, a cane, some kind of training or whatever in order to get back in the workplace, right? And, these programs are as good as the bureaucrats who sit in the seats. And the bureaucrats who sit in the seats tend not to be that great.
Research, the difference between what gets actually spent on anything good in a private institution is 80%, and in a government institution is 20%.
Those are just rough numbers. I think that the bigger the government agency, the less that they're good at something. But I can tell you this: my wife worked for about maybe a year and a half or something for vocational rehabilitation in Florida, and when she was preparing to leave, it was like August or September that she was quitting her, leaving her job to come up here to live with me in New Hampshire. She left a little later than I did. And at that point, she had finished all of her work for the year and had extra cases that were then doled out, that were nearly done, nearly complete. All they had to do was basically be signed off or whatever. They were handed out to the other employees who had not gotten as far as she had that year. And one wonders why. And I would suggest It's that intelligence privilege that we were just talking about previously, is that, you know, the Army found that you can't, they can't do anything with a person who has an IQ below 83. And it doesn't matter what the job is. If a person has an IQ of like 115, they're going to be great at it. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it's infantry, peeling potatoes, or, you know, intelligence, or being, you know, running nuclear silos. It doesn't make a difference. If they're intelligent, they're going to do it better. IQ isn't the end-all be-all of human organization. It isn't.
Peeling potatoes, you're actually wrong on. Yeah. It has to be a creative endeavor, which peeling potatoes, you're not going to be better at because you're faster.
Yeah, I can.
Or because you're smarter.
I worked pretty much everything.
Yeah.
I worked as a dishwasher at a restaurant for a couple of weeks, and they said I was the worst that they'd ever had because my hands just began to peel. I was slow. I don't know. I don't know what was going on, but I wasn't good at it. So I'd like to believe what you're saying is true. I will, just because of that.
Yeah, creative endeavors are the ones that hit the Pareto principle. The square root thing, where a square root of the people doing the activity produce half of the activity being done. Like you,
is this
you
the 80-20 rule?
Yeah, the 80-20 rule is a shorthand for it, but really it's a square root thing.
Yeah.
Like if you have 100 people making music, it'll be 10 of them that do half of the music people actually listen to, and so on and so forth.
Hmm. Well, you know, and what do you do with the others? You know, what do you
that's,
do with those, that
well,
90%?
That's what put charity them to work is in the for. Fields. And that's the thing. People expect government to solve these problems, so they expect that what they need to do to solve these problems is pay their taxes instead of actually give to the charities that would be solving them.
Sounds accurate. 855-450-3733. What are your solutions? I'd love to hear them. 855-450. Free as in freedom here on Free Talk Live.
On a multidimensional probe, the SysGov Transtemporal Vehicle Clio discovers two entire universes have been annihilated in a massive time-traveling accident. Robert Kaminsky and his crew race home with the news, only to learn their own universe is next. To pull off the impossible, they'll have to embrace the unpalatable by placing their trust in the admin, SysGov's xenophobic sister universe, and the same people who tried to kill them all only months before. The Valkyrie Protocol by David Weber and Jacob Hollow. Available October 6th, wherever books are sold. Visit Bain Books at Bain.com. For more.
Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live. Call in. Talk about whatever's on your mind. It's Mark with you.
Beakless Mountaineer.
And Richie Rich.
That's what we do here on Free Talk Live. We open up the phone lines and let you call in and talk about whatever you want. Beakless Mountaineer, we're going to get back to the article there where we are talking about what the Democrats are hoping to do with the Federal Reserve. These are the Democrats on a national level. But we do have calls, and that's what we do here on Free Talk Live. The number 855-450-3733. Why don't you write that down? Put it in your phone so you've got it. 855-450.
Speed dial.
Free here on Free Talk Live. Go to Christian Anarchist calling in on the phone lines. Toll-free phone lines. Gene, you there?
Hey, I am.
What's on your mind?
Sounds like you might have changed. I've called about anarchy, but it sounds like you might have changed your tune on masks.
Me?
Yes.
What is my tune?
Well, you used to wear a mask and you used to like wear a mask, and it sounded like earlier that you decided that maybe masks aren't really doing much.
New science, Gene.
I do like the idea that I can wear a mask and run around with some level of anonymity should I wish. I think that's neat and a freedom that we did not otherwise have previously from a social level.
I have worn my full compliance mask into a bank.
Yes.
But you used to think that they did something for you as far as the COVID.
Well, I think that what I probably would have said is that the masks are for other people, like protecting other people as opposed to protecting you, that maybe they do something. I don't know. Mostly what I do with my mask now is that I keep it in my pocket and I forget to put it on. and
where
mostly,
it absorbs his leg sweat all day long.
Oh yeah, this mask is old. I mean, it's fraying.
Leave it alone.
Take a look at this. No. This is an N95 mask. It's been sitting in my back pocket for, it's got to be 4 weeks now. I've taken the time to draw a smiley face on it.
Wow.
What is this thing doing? Let's be serious, folks. This encrusted, German-crusted thing.
It's obviously the government needs to mandate the drawing of smiley faces on all masks for the sake of our immune systems.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, anyway.
Yeah, so basically what I'm doing is I'm waiting until somebody tells me to put a mask on. Then I will, because, look, you know, whatever your level of comfort is, if it took... So if I some friends of mine want to come over to my house, but they're only comfortable if they can be a certain distance away. They're older, and I wear a mask.
So anyway, wait, hold on,
Gene. Before you go on, I am willing to accommodate them because I want to see them. Please go ahead.
But what I was getting at anyway with that before we get into anarchy is that this is one of the things I like about you over some of the other hosts, and I'm not going to mention any names.
And
that you can actually be convinced after you look at the numbers and the logic, you can actually say, hey, okay, maybe I wasn't right. But anyway, back to – that's an offhanded compliment.
Thank you.
So back to the idea of anarchy, which, you know, I've been talking about anarchy with you guys for 15 years.
Thank you for your service.
One of the things that I hear a lot of and I disagree with is that part of anarchy definition is belief in the non-aggression principle. And I don't agree with that. I agree with the non-aggression principle. Don't get me wrong there.
The non-aggression principle is what?
That you don't do violence against other people that aren't doing violence against you.
Right. You don't initiate force.
It's a principle that requires reciprocity.
Or initiate fraud.
I'd actually like to argue that there is no anarchy without the non-aggression principle, because once you start initiating force or threats of force, you are creating a political hierarchy between yourself and whoever you're threatening.
Well, you can argue that if you want. I'm not going to argue against that, but the point I'm trying to make is that if you, because the definition of an anarchy is no rulers, but if you then say, well, in order to be an anarchist, you have to follow this one rule, then you're basically saying, if you don't do what I say you should do, then you're not an anarchist.
Well, so to be fair, it's not a rule. It's a principle.
That's the main reason I disagree with that.
So,
well, the rule is to not be a ruler.
The first thing I would say is that if we're talking about the term anarchy, the way academics use the term anarchy, fine. If we're talking about the way that libertarians use it, okay. I think the vast majority of people use the term to describe Molotov cocktail throwing lunatics who want to institute their version of government. And
we have a new term
for
that now, Mark. It's called Antifa.
Yeah, right. Fine. Yeah. But, you know, for me, I don't particularly like the term and won't use it for myself. And I am looking for steps that I can take today. If there was a switch that suddenly would just made the government go away, I don't think we'd be better off by throwing it. I think that that we have a nation and a world full of people that are held in check at this point by threats of violence against their person by an organization that is more powerful. And that if you just somehow get rid of that organization, that they haven't got the coping skills to be able to manage in a world that way. So, you know, hopefully the people that do have coping skills can wipe them out in a civil war, in a global war unlike we've ever seen. But I don't think that'll work.
So what I'm trying to say is that I think that the better definition or the better thing, the better principle behind anarchy is self-ownership. That's the one that I think is key to anarchy, not the non-aggression principle. Because you
agreed.
Can, if you want to be an anarchist and you want to be violent against other people, I think there's no rule against you being violent against other people. However, nature will prove that those who want to work together with others are going to prosper more than those who want to do violence against others. That's going to be a natural occurrence of non-aggression.
Well, so you can't. I don't think you can't. I mean, you're trying to make a division that there is no division here. I mean, I assume that I understand what you mean by self-ownership. And if I respect your self-ownership, then I can't initiate force against you. I mean, initiating force against you is, by its nature, a disrespect of your self-ownership. Which, I mean, well, I've trouble with the term, because who's the self that is owned? But, like, bodily autonomy, you know?
I guess what I'm saying is, if I want to disrespect someone's self-ownership because I hate them for some reason, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's any kind of statism going on. That's basically just two people.
Just violence.
One person violating another person's rights. So violation of rights does not a state make, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, aren't they trying to rule over you by punishing the behavior that they don't like?
Yes, but if I try to rule over one other person, does that make me the state?
Essentially.
Well, and I'm going to reiterate what I said. It's not the non-aggression rule. It's the non-aggression principle, and it requires reciprocity, right? So if you want to live your life by following the non-aggression principle, it's just basically a statement that you're choosing not to aggress against anybody else. Now, does that mean that other people have to follow the non-aggression principle? No. They are more than free to aggress against you. And following your own principles of self-ownership and self-defense, you can repel that. So, you know, it's not required of anarchy to follow the non-aggression principle, but it is necessary for a polite, peaceful society that the people involved in it follow it.
See there? That wasn't so hard to agree with me, now was it?
I'm the other anarchist on the show, Gene.
Because that's exactly what I've been saying, right?
Well, I think once you start threatening somebody, you are becoming their ruler.
Right, and if you're a follower of the non-aggression principle and someone threatens you, you repel the threat.
Right.
It's not a violation of your principles.
Right, and that's disagreeing with them being my ruler.
Are all threats credible?
No.
Well, you know, I also might murder somebody. Does that make me their god because I took their life? I don't think it does. So
you definitely tried to rule them, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, I definitely took their life away from them.
You're forcing them to not do anything ever again.
Thank you, Christian Anarchist. If you want to find more about Christian anarchy, you can read Tolstoy's The Kingdom of God is Within You. I thought it was a fine read. I don't know if it converted me or whatever. 855-450-3733. Free Talk Live. Talk Live. 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE. Peakless Mountaineer, I sincerely hope we get to the rest of your article. This is what happens here in the 9 o'clock hours. People begin to call in. I'd just like to tell everybody a little bit about what it's like to call into a radio and Free Talk Live specifically. There will probably not be much more than a 20-minute wait tops. Sometimes it's a 2-minute wait. I mean, that's just the way it is. That's the way talk radio is these days. And you may call in and see how long the wait is. But we're going to take your calls as quickly as we possibly can.
If you're a chronic caller, you go to the back of the line, though. Is that still a rule? That used to be a rule.
We certainly try to make new voices more heard here on Free Talk Live. You know, and I can tell you that people who call in often, if you want to use this term chronic, you may.
I've heard it used on this show before.
Read, but not by me.
Okay.
If you call in often, you are, you know, more likely to hit the back of the line. But, you know, I mean, to some extent, they're the cast of the characters, too, here on Free Talk Live. So, you know, anybody who's calling in is making the show better in some manner or another, and I'll take it. I want to tell you about AnyPay. AnyPay 2.0 is here. And crypto payments are now faster than ever. I just used AnyPay this evening to pay for my lunch, my dinner. If you're using Edge Wallet, I am, Handcash, Bitcoin.com's wallet, or Dash Wallet, your experience should be smooth. But some other wallets aren't ready for this impressive new technology. Their wallet programmers need to hear from you, the wallet users. Visit AnyPayInc.com, upgrade to learn why some popular wallets are incompatible with AnyPay 2.0, and reach out to the wallet programmers and encourage them to make payments perfect at anypayinc.com/upgrade. anypayinc.com/upgrade. I did this day before yesterday, sent a Twitter notice to Coinomi, who used to be my favorite wallet at one point. But that's anypayinc.com/upgrade. Let's go to the phones. We've got Tom in Kansas. Tom, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. Hey, it's an honor to get on your show. One thing I haven't heard a while from numerous talk shows is one thing I always hear from Trump is how he supports the troop.
Uh-huh.
I'm a 21-year veteran. And
does that mean you're still in the military, or you were in the military for 21 years?
I was. I've been retired for 5.5 years.
All right.
So one thing that I keep hearing from Trump is how he supports us.
Yep.
But one thing I'm not hearing from Biden, Harris, you know, the left, is that they want to do all these cuts and raise our taxes. But what I'm not hearing is, what are they going to do for us, and how are their actions, say, if they were to get elected, what actions are they imposing on us that could hurt us, as in VA benefits as well as our pension, since they want to cut everything? Because I'm on a fixed income, and it just scares me to death, because I haven't heard any other caller call in that's a veteran saying, hey, I'm worried about this, I'm worried about that, being a veteran. But what could they impose on us that could really hurt us from our income, since we're on a fixed income? And how is it coming from, you know, it's coming from the VA and our pension? I know it's all from the DOD Department of Defense, you know, when they pass their budget. But what could they really do to hurt us?
I don't think VA benefits go through the DOD. I could be wrong on that, but I think that they're a separate
line.
Maybe
I'm wrong as well, too. Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong as well, but
so
I'm just kind of curious.
If I had to spitball it here, I mean, Trump is not perfect when it comes to making more disabled veterans, which is what war is, right? He's not the best, but he is better than most of the presidents I've in my lifetime. Probably the least violent president since Reagan. And it's a heck of a thing to say, but it appears to be true.
Well, to the point where those wars aren't even really a campaign talking point by either.
Right. I mean, Trump was trying to do sort of the libertarian talking point previously.
Well, to get the libertarian vote
right.
Recently.
But and as I understand it, there's some shelling going on right now in Afghanistan as Trump's preparing to leave the country, which I don't know how to address that exactly. Clearly, people are, going to be killed by that shelling. But the Obama administration, which is what I consider, I think people are basically hoping for with Biden is that, hey, maybe Barack Obama will come back in and throw a little help to Joe. Now, why he isn't helping by campaigning, I don't have an answer for you. But, the Obama administration, they didn't call him drone bomber for nothing. So I would say that I don't think Biden wants to talk about what he's going to do for the vets.
I mean, my biggest concern, if I were to really go into what changes the VA would have if Biden gets elected, is what changes is he going to make to healthcare in general? And how is that going to tie into your VA? Because there are a lot of changes planned for healthcare, none of which seem terribly clear or succinct. So,
yeah. I mean, whatever changes Biden wanted to make, he could have made them over the 8 years that he was in office.
What have you heard that is causing your concern, I guess?
Well, I'm just concerned that I hear a lot of cuts that they want to propose, but I don't know how it's directed and if it is affected towards the VA or our pension, that we've earned, because I did 21 years and it's like, I'm on a fixed income and it's like, well, if you start cutting this, start cutting that. And is it going to affect my mortgage, my regular payments, the livelihood, for me to maintain as a provider for my family based upon my years of service because of my disabilities? And I'm sure it worries a lot of veterans. I'm like, well, if they're going to start cutting this and making us go back to get reevaluated and downgrade our disabilities, that's going to take away our percentages as well as the money that we get. It's like, oh, well, if we can't work, then how do we, make a different income, provide an income? Yeah. And if I can't do it, then what's going to happen to, like, my mortgage, my bills,
yeah,
my livelihood?
I hear the concern. I don't know what talking points are coming out of the Biden-Harris camp or even the Trump camp.
Me neither, because you don't hear nothing what they're going to do for vets or what, you know, because I
hadn't heard that they were making these cuts, honestly, or planning to make any cuts in their spending.
Well, I hope that's true, because as we know, Kansas is very overtaxed in certain areas and certain counties, and to increase it even more with some of the delegate or the candidates that are running right now, and it's like, wow, this is even going to hurt me even more. And it's like, what do you do? I mean, besides move, out of this area, because it's overtaxed, and it's like, if they want to increase even more and take away from us, it's like, wow, it's like,
Learn to code, I guess.
Right. I get your concern, and I hope the best. I don't know what to say. I mean, I think that I think that the candidates aren't going to do anything that's going to markedly make your life better or worse, because it's president and it sits way above the rest of the stuff. But the government made a promise to these vets, and I think it should keep it. 855-450-3733. Thanks for the call, Tom. 855-450-FREE here on Free Talk Live.
Moose is the German Shepherd and hasn't had any kind of health problems at all. He has been on Dynavite since he's a puppy.
DINOVITE.com.
We tell anybody that has a dog, if there was something that you could do right from the beginning so that you don't have expensive veterinary bills, why would you not do it? Get the Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
Get some Dynavite. How happy your dog will be.
DINOVITE.com.
Free Talk Live. The number is 855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE as in freedom. It's Mark with you.
Peakless Mountaineer.
And Richie Rich.
Call in, talk about whatever you want to talk about. Peakless, I have kept you away from your article. I want to make sure that you get a chance to bring that up. I know that there are some issues that we didn't quite delve into that you were hoping to touch upon. So what are they?
Well, the most important issue I wanted to touch on is where they said here that this would be the first major change to the Fed's mandate since 1977. So if you look at what happened to the Fed in 1977, that they did the exact same thing.
Uh-huh.
They did this exact same thing. I mean,
and this is
not exactly in the same way. What they had done at the time was they were specifically concerned about racial equality in housing.
Okay.
So they told the Fed, you need to get these numbers up. You need to get the number of home loans that are offered to African Americans to be the same as the number that are, percentage wise.
Proportionally.
Yes. That is offered to Caucasians. And what they had to do in order to do that was to greenlight a lot of things in the local branches of the banks that basically said, okay, well, you cannot judge these two by the same standard because you, as the local banks, have to have a higher proportion of dark-skinned debtors.
Right. Well, one thing I'll say is that systematically, black banks have been run out of business in the United States, and that has had negative consequences. So,
oh yeah, I mean the actual solution is to have some amount of competition,
right?
Which
competition
would
be good, and then not going and burning down Black Wall Street, right? Those things too
sure would help everybody quite a lot, honestly. Yeah.
Right.
And that's the thing. For over 100 years, it's been near to impossible to break into banking. I mean, essentially, they came together and said, hey, we've been trying to push each other out of this market for a very long time, and we can't do it. So how about we just agree that we are the only ones allowed in this market? And that's where you got the creature from Jekyll Island that became the Federal Reserve.
Right.
So when you say it's difficult to get into banking, are you talking about like at the Federal Reserve level?
Oh, it's astonishingly difficult to get into.
Right. You can't just open a bank. I mean, it's so difficult.
Well, but credit unions are a thing, and credit I think that would be different. Easier.
Yep.
And if you have a specific target demographic that you're looking to get into, right, I would think opening or starting a credit union in your community would be beneficial. And then one of the membership requirements of that credit union is to be part of that specific demographic.
If that's what they want to do, I mean, I would hate to see businesses run based on being part of a demographic, but they should be able to do that if that's what they wish.
That's what credit unions do now. It's just a little bit more wide open.
Well, I mean, not a demographic as much as you know, people that live in a given geographic area or work at a different place.
Sure.
I don't know if that falls. So demographics generally mean color, race,
age, gender,
you know, these kind of things. Those are broadly what demographics
sure.
are. You can put other qualitative info on there and come up with other things, but, you know, that's a demographic, I think.
Okay.
And yeah, if they hadn't destroyed Black Wall Street and if it were actually possible to break into this industry, because it is, I mean, I don't think there's anything that is as regulated as the financial sector. I mean, especially as this country has moved from a manufacturing country to a financial services country, it has gotten more and more and more regulated where you cannot just open banks and be like, hey, I want a black bank. I want this to serve this community because we're having trouble and they will like it better for me to have this bank than for you to have your bank. You can't do that.
So in the last year, banks around the world have acknowledged that cryptocurrency is liable to come in and change things dramatically.
Seems like a good idea as well.
China has created its own digital currency, and there have been quite a few transactions. I don't have the numbers sitting right here in front of me, but you know, lots of zeros involving the numbers of what was done, what was transacted, and how many there were, you know, in the millions and billions. The United States has announced, the Federal Reserve has announced its own digital currency. And if these big, because basically there's only three countries that count when it comes to these things. Sorry, England. You know, it's Russia, it's China, it's the United States. You know, Saudi Arabia and England, I suppose you can put them in the second tier of countries that count. But the when cryptocurrency may very well come in and do what the internet did to broadcast television and broadcast radio. I mean, the reason that I can't cuss on the radio is just because it may offend a community. But any one person who is listening to the radio right now can go see and hear some of the most horrifying things possible on the internet. But, you know, I mean, how many 12-year-old boys are huddled underneath their covers right now listening to a transistor radio of my voice? Probably not very many. I would go so far as to venture to say zero.
They're on Twitch.
Right. Listening to people cuss while they play video games.
Yes.
Why, it's almost as if the market itself could decide which words are more and less appealing.
Well, I would say that even the government's intro here is actually in this area has perverted the marketplace to the point that now my son goes out and looks for content based on, you know, the things that he wants to consume, but it has nothing. He doesn't actually want to hear the cuss words.
Interesting.
He's not looking for cuss words. He's looking for the content about what he wants to hear, and that the people on there just use them because the younger people from my age on down cuss.
I did not buy a CD unless it had that parental advisory sticker on it.
See, I would never have even considered that, but it, you know, it doesn't motivate me. I consider the use of cuss words to be an indication that you're filling space, don't know what to say, you know, a variety of things. So,
instead of ums and ahs,
right,
it's Tourette's.
Yeah, effing.
You know? Well, I think it's useful to know when people have moved from their speaking brain into their lizard brain, because there is actually a different part of the brain that is not your speech centers at all. It is a much deeper, more primitive part that uses cuss words.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It's essentially the equivalent to a chimpanzee letting everyone know that there is a predator here.
Yeah, I was hearing, they were talking about, I was listening to Sapiens, which is a relatively new book, was a New York Times bestseller. I'm listening to it through Audible. And I think we, our coupon code there is probably still good, FTL.
Give it a shot. Why not?
Whatever. And they were talking about green monkeys. In fact, green monkeys have their own language, and it's a, you know, they have a word for look out, it's an eagle, and a word for look out, it's a lion. And when you, and they can
different
test
strategies
this
to survive.
Right. You can test this by simply getting green monkeys in some, you know, cage or area and play the one noise, and they all look up for the eagle. Play the other noise, and they all run up a tree to avoid the lion.
Interesting.
So there you go. And by the way, they have lots of green monkeys on St. Kitts, perhaps Nevis. I don't know for sure whether they're on Nevis or not, because they were released there to, I don't know, deal with the rats, maybe. Some creature they were trying to get rid of. This is always a bad idea, ladies and gentlemen. But those green monkeys are basically disease-free because they're non-indigenous but pervasive, so they use them for testing. All the drug companies want these green monkeys because they are the best green monkeys. Anything else you want to get on this one, Peakless?
I seem to have lost my place here.
These things happen. The wonders of modern
see, the next portion of it was just where they talked about how Biden and Warren had previously... Ah, here we are. Presumptive Democratic... remember, this is back in August. Presumptive Democratic presidential nominee. Joe Biden recently released a similar proposal calling on the Fed to... quote, aggressively enhance monitoring and targeting of persistent racial gaps in jobs, wages, and health.
Does the Federal Reserve has anything to do with jobs?
They create the money.
They do create the money, but this, you know, whatever. I don't know how they
could possibly. Well, if they'd let us save some of it, maybe we'd have a few more jobs.
Sure. Your savings are constantly diminished by the Federal Reserve and their money printing policies.
Then you'd be a rich dude hoarding the wealth.
855-450-3733. It's 855-450-FREE here on Free Talk Live. All right, it's another edition of the Edgington Post Show. I am Mark Edge, coming to you for Free Talk Live. I've got with me an important guest. I've got Paul Summers. Did I get that right, Paul?
That's correct.
And you're the former Attorney General of Tennessee.
That is correct.
You've also been a senior judge there and been in law your whole life, right?
I've been in law for about 45 years, and I've tried cases at every level of both state and federal court.
I got an email, and you're the spokesperson for an issue that is near and dear to my heart. I think that there are a few things out there that are slam dunks for a constitutional amendment. It's not that hard for them to do if they want to do it, and I think the vast majority of people could agree. Now, I'm not sure about the vast majority of U.S. representatives and senators, but the vast majority of people would go ahead and say that this is absolutely something that we need to consider. Can you explain to me, please, what it is that we're talking about here?
Yes. For 151 years, the Supreme Court of the United States has consisted of 9 justices. The Constitution is silent on the number of justices. If a majority of the House and the Senate increased or decreased the number of justices and the president signed the bill, it could be changed. We feel, a bipartisan group of former attorneys general strongly feel, that we need to set the number of Supreme Court justices at 9 and that there be a constitutional amendment. It would be the shortest constitutional amendment. It would be the 28th. The 13 words would read, "The Supreme Court of the United States shall be composed of 9 justices," and this would prevent or at least deter the concept of court packing.
Right. So let's do a little history on court packing. You probably know it better than I do because you've taken on this endeavor as time well spent. Basically, as all I know is from when I was a kid in civics class, that FDR wasn't getting what he wanted out of the Supreme Court, so he threatened the judges by packing the court, and that he ultimately did get the ruling that he wanted to get. So the packing of the court never occurred, but the threat thereof presumably resulted in him getting the ruling he wanted.
The last effort at packing the court was FDR in 1937. He wanted to increase the number of justices, apparently because he wanted to have justices that were ideologically consistent with his political positions. A bipartisan group of legislators did not back him as a result of his failure to pack the court. Then he lost some of his support, and he also created and emboldened some of his opponents. So court packing is not a good thing. It does three things. Number one, it damages the rule of law. Secondly, it denigrates or destroys the independence of the court. And most importantly, it erodes the checks and balances on the abuse of power of the other two branches. We oppose court packing, and we need to set the constitutional number of justices at 9.
If you're talking about a civics class or American or people becoming American citizens or talking about the American government, the terms checks and balances come up. That would lead me to believe that checks and balances are extraordinarily important, and to allow a door open to destroy checks and balances. Because if the executive can choose to pressure the court in such a way that they're going to get the ruling that they want, then the court doesn't have the check and balance that it's supposed to have. It's supposed to be able to determine what is constitutional and what is not.
Judges, whether they are Supreme Court justices or whether they're trial judges, they call the balls and the strikes. They are supposed to be, they don't even need to wear black robes. They ought to wear black and striped robes like referees. And so we always value particularly the checks and balances on the abuse of power with judges, and we value their independence. Judges are not supposed to set policy. They are supposed to interpret the law and not make the law or legislate. That's all we're trying to prevent by setting the number of Supreme Court justices at a certain number. And 9 seems to have worked very well for 151 years. Let's put it in the Constitution. Quite frankly, most people, most lawyers thought it already was. But we need to put it in the Constitution. And by the way, this is a completely a bipartisan effort on behalf of the former attorneys general who have spoken out on this issue.
Yeah, and I do want to go through what your guys' plan is as far as getting this amendment through. I got one last point on the number 9. 9's great because it's an odd number, and you can have 5-4 rulings. So odd numbers would work. A larger number than, say, 3 is good because, as you'd have in, say, an appellate, a federal appellate case or something like that, because then you get more legal minds involved. A smaller number is good in so much as the Supreme Court building's the newest of buildings for federal branches. I think it's at 1950 or something like that. And it was built for 9 people. And so it's a good number because it's odd and we're prepared for it by and large. So things have worked out reasonably well. A good plurality of decisions from the Supreme Court are actually 9-0. It isn't as divisive as people think, with a bunch of Republicans and Democrats in there arguing over stuff. These are judges that read the law. I mean, we don't even go so far as to call them law geeks, that really care as to what is written down and how that relates to the Constitution, which is more things that are written down. So I support the number 9 also. Now, let me ask you this. Now that we're in agreement that this should happen, what's your guys' plan for implementation? How do you get from, you know, 2 guys talking about it to going from so much further?
We're working nationwide on this issue. We're so grateful for the question to be asked right out of the chute at the debates, the presidential debates the other night about court packing. We're glad that at least one of the candidates was definitive that he was against it. The other candidate would not answer the question. We are trying to get both Republicans and Democrats to influence all candidates who are running for election, whether it even be at the state level, to support the Keep 9 Amendment. Not just that we support it, but also we support the concept, but we support the amendment, because things can change once the elections are over. We want to make sure that we can get 2/3 vote in the House and the Senate and pass this amendment, and then we'll go to the ratification process of 3/4 of the states. We're working hard. We're a grassroots effort. But as you said, how could you be against this?
How indeed? So help me out on amendments. I don't think every American knows exactly how it goes.
And I get fuzzy every time somebody talks about one. So is it it's the House, Senate, and then states?
Two-thirds of the House, two-thirds of the Senate. And then once the constitutional amendment is sent to the states for ratification, requires three-quarters of the state legislatures to ratify it.
Can that be done in a different order?
I'm sorry?
Can that be done in a different order?
No. It's in that order. Well, there's a way to have a constitutional convention, but we have found through history the easiest way, the simplest way is to have the legislative body at the federal level pass it by two-thirds each and then send it to the various states and have three-quarters of the states ratify. We've had constitutional amendments. We've had 27 of them. This would be the 28th. And we recently had one, the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote, which was ratified by the three-quarters of the states in August of 1920, 100 years ago. So that's how important these constitutional amendments are. And all we want to do is include those 13 words in our United States Constitution.
Yeah, it's rare. But it's and that's good because that means it's reserved for important things. And this would be something that I would consider to be important enough that not only would I support it, because I'll support lots of constitutional amendments out there. But not only that, but I think that we can get the vast majority of people who whom you talk to about this that to go for it, too. I think that in all likelihood, you could get the Senate and the House, if it gets in front of them, to agree on this too. Maybe not at the contentious point of an election, but don't worry, we'll have a Congress coming up here in a new Congress in January. And and it's a good thing for them to address, because the very idea that this was brought up is, I mean, I've heard lots of things called the nuclear option. That's even worse than the nuclear option. Paul Summers, where can people go to find out more?
We've got a nonpartisan coalition called the Coalition to Preserve the Independence of the Supreme Court. You can contact us by looking us up on our website, www.keep9.org. Repeat, www.keep9.org. Please contact us. We want your help. Get out the word, Keep Nine.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the realtor, Mark Warda.
Looking for a great real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire, which is ground zero for the Liberty Movement. Your first call should be to Mark Warden from Porcupine Real Estate. He's more than just a real estate agent. He's your New Hampshire concierge. Where are the best places to live? Do you want farm, city, the burbs, or forest? Do you want a duplex or multifamily building so that renters pay your mortgage? There are homes in all price ranges in New Hampshire, and Mark can help with financing, too. Invest in liberty and property. Mark Warden can help.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.